Chof Beis Amud Aleph. Daf Chof Beis Amud Aleph. We are still in the middle of discussing the Takana of Ezra, that a person should not engage in Torah after having a seminal emission until you've gone to the mikveh. Now, what does it mean not to engage in Torah? We've already seen seven opinions as to exactly what that means, concluding with Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseiro basically did away with the whole thing and said, "Ein divrei Torah mekabelim tuma." Don't worry about the whole business. So now we're going to continue still working our way through the opinions until we actually reach our halachic conclusions. So we're in the Chof Beis Amud Aleph. 1, 2, 4. The fifth wide line towards the end of the line. Omar Mar. Okay? Alright? Fifth wide line towards the end of the line. Omar Mar. We had said in the Braisa before, Matzia es ha-Mishneh ve'inim Matzia es ha-Gemara. A Baal Keli can expound Mishneh. You can learn Mishneh in depth because there's a limit to how deep it gets, but not Gemara. Gemara is mamish, getting into the full of it. That you should not learn in depth.
Why is depth a factor?
What's that?
Why is depth a factor?
So we saw that there were different approaches as to how this takana worked. Some understood it as depending on the nature of the material itself. Others did understand it as, yes, not to get deeply involved in Torah. A superficial way is okay, right? We saw the opinion that says you can review things you're fluent in, but not to go too deep. Others said that no, you can learn whatever you want, just don't say Hashem's name. But yes, there is this approach that the Isser is not to go too deep. The deeper you go, the more you're connecting. So I said, remain at the sidelines, don't go too deep. So now, this opinion says, yes, Mishnah yes, Gemara not. Misayeh alel Rabbi Eloi. This supports Rabbi Eloi. The Omar Rabbi Eloi, Omar Rabbi Acha, Rabbi Eloi said in the name of Omar Rabbi Acha bar Yaakov, in the name of Rabbi Acha bar Yaakov, Mishum Rabbeinu, in the name of Rabbeinu, that's usually understood to be Rav, Halacha, Daf Chof Beis Amud Aleph, Chof Beis Amud Aleph, about approximately the eighth wide line, right? Chof Beis Amud Aleph, about the eighth wide line. So, yes, Rabbi Eloi indeed ruled this way, that the halacha is that a Baal Keri matzia es ha-Mishneh ve'inu matzia es ha-Gemara. He can learn Mishneh in depth, he can expound Mishneh, but not Gemara. Alright? Chof Beis Amud Aleph? Yeah, okay. Now, Kitanoi. So we're going to show again that others had this machlokes as well. Here we're just going to show three opinions which actually correspond to some of the seven that we've seen earlier. Matzia es ha-Mishneh ve'ina matzia es ha-Gemara. A Baal Keri can learn Mishneh in depth, but not Gemara. Divrei Rav Meir. That's the opinion of Rav Meir. Rabbi Yehuda ben Gamliel, Eimei Mishum Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel. He says in the name of Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, ze v'ze osur. Both are osur. Even learning Mishneh is osur. Gemara. Va'amri lo ze v'ze mutar. Others say both are mutar. Now, none of these are new opinions. All of these correspond to opinions we've seen earlier, as we'll show now. Manda omar zeh v'zeh asur. The opinion that says Mishneh and Gemara in depth is asur. Rabbi Yochanan Asandler. That's following the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan Asandler, who we saw earlier, who cited Rabbi Akiva saying that you're not allowed to even enter the Bes Medrash. You can't even just sit quietly. No learning at all is permitted. That's the most stringent approach. Manda omar zeh v'zeh mutar. The opinion that says both are mutar, Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseiro. It's like Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseiro says there's no issue at all. A Baal Keri is allowed to learn as normal. Now, what's the halacha on all this? So, Omar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok. Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok says, Nog alme kahanit lo savik. The minig has become to follow the opinion of these three elders, the following three elders, on the following halachic issues. Kirabi Eloi bereishis hagez, we follow Rabbi Eloi's opinion on reishis hagez. What's reishis hagez? A person owns a sheep. Actually, it really first kicks in if you own five sheep. A person owns a small flock. Halacha is that the first shearings have to go to a kohen. So Rabbi Eloi had a ruling on this. We'll see soon what it is, and we follow his ruling. Rabbi Yeshia b'kilayim, we follow Rabbi Yeshia's ruling on kilayim. You're not allowed to plant different things together. We'll see soon what his ruling is. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira b'divrei Torah. And really, what we're getting at now is that we follow the ruling of Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira when it comes to Torah learning. And now we elaborate. Rabbi Eloi bereishis hagetz, we follow the opinion of Rabbi Eloi when it comes to the first shearings, the koto akoyin, the Tanya. Says in the Braise, Rabbi Eloi Oimer. Rabbi Eloi says, Reishis Hagez ein enoeg ela ba'aretz. The obligation of Reishis Hagez, of giving the first shearings to a Kohen, applies only in Eretz Yisrael. And he derives that from Psukim, not our subject right now. What's that? So that's the halacha, yeah. Rabbi Yeshia b'kilayim, we follow the opinion of Rabbi Yeshia when it comes to kilayim. What's this? Kediksib. So the pasuk says, "Lo tizra karmecha kilayim." You should not plant your vineyard with kilayim. Rabbi Yeshia emes. So naturally, we understand that to mean don't plant another seed along with the grape. Rabbi Yeshia emes. Rabbi Yeshia says no. La oilam einechayiv. You will not be held liable for planting kilayim in your vineyard. He understands the pasuk as follows, and the pasuk says, "Don't plant your vineyard with kilayim." That means, don't plant kilayim, a mixture, in addition to the vineyard. Meaning that it doesn't mean don't plant the grape plus another type. It means don't plant a mixture plus the grape, and therefore, it's only usher if you plant a grape seed plus another two types of grain, barley and wheat. So
those
it's only
species that are involved
in kilayim? No, those are not the only species, but his main point is, he's just taking these grains as an example, but his main point is that the issur of kilayim, I'll put it this way, liability for kilayim, for planting your vineyard with kilayim, only applies if you plant a grape plus two seeds, plus two different species.
Pomegranates and figs.
What's that? But those might be the Rabbanan. I'm not familiar with the particulars, but here what he's talking about is the Isser of Kilayim as in grapes with grains.
Here they throw in a single thrust of the hand.
Right, meaning it's got to be one action.
It's got to be one action as opposed to. So if I planted something today and I didn't realize that tomorrow I planted something else there, then even though it realistically is aligned, but I didn't do it at one time.
Right, and therefore there won't be liability for such a thing. The produce will be usher.
Right.
The produce will be prohibited, but there won't be liability. A person will not get malchus for doing such a thing.
Are you allowed to do that in certain areas?
Certain areas and certain types, it's complex, and I don't know the halachas. I never properly learned that. But the araisa of planting your vineyard with kilayim only applies if you do it plus two grains. By the way, the Rashba just notes that there's a separate iser of planting your field with kilayim. Right? That means planting any two grains in a field. It doesn't always have to be three in order to achieve liability. But if it's an iser of a vineyard, meaning the particular iser of planting your vineyard with kilayim only applies if it's grape plus two. You're going
to
say something?
The grape has to be the same time as the other two, or the grape can already be named from the other two?
So it seems, I'm not sure about this, but it seems that for liability purposes, it's only if you do all three together. But for purposes of the iser, that the produce will become usr, that's in any sort of configuration that you have them going together. In fact, the Rashba says it's to the extent that even if you walk by a vineyard carrying a pot of a flower pot that has holes on the bottom such that it's exposed, you walk by carrying such a flower pot, the content of the flower pot already becomes usr because it's considered that it grew together. It grew together for a couple of seconds. So that's there's big differences between the liability for doing it, which here it appears that it's only if you actually put all three together in one shot, and the prohibition of the produce, which is in any form that the two grow together. That's how the Rashba puts it. Again, I don't know how it comes out halacha lemaisa, but that's how the Rashba elucidates it. Yes. 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 The Rashba says certainly you transgress if a person plants. Yeah, the 2 grains in a vineyard. You don't get that issue. You'll get the other issue. The Rashba says the whole implication of this point is that if you warn someone, you're about, you know, before Malchus, you have to warn the person of transgression he's about to do. So if you warn someone that, hey, you're about to transgress the issur of planting kilayim with a vineyard, that will only be so, and you'll only get malchus for that if it was grape plus 2 grains. But if you warn the guy, hey, you're about to plant your field with kilayim, it'd be chayiv even if it was just 2 grains.
And how about in the case of if there are 2 areas that are even couple of feet apart, but the wind then carries the seed over. You're not doing it. It's
no, even as far as the prohibition of the produce, it's even if it's just happened by itself. But exactly the issue of distances, this is a whole mesechta dedicated to this kilayim, which is one of the most complex mesechtas in Zeroyim, and I don't know the particulars, I must confess. What's that? No, 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 get into it. Dive in. Go for it.
It's
yeah.
A doubly strange hop. Because, you know, all the other kalayim, sorim, at least, like, you can think of cases where it would make sense if such a person would want to do such a thing. But you would understand why you're doing it. But at least it makes sense, you know, maybe you know, bring this animal, that animal, it could help you out, maybe. You know?
Yeah.
Here, it's like, what? Why do people want to do this?
What, want to plant these things together?
These things together, right. I mean, nothing's helping the other one. You can't harvest your meat or your barley because your grapes are in the way. It's like it's...
Well, it does seem that somehow or the other, it seems that people who knew how to play agriculture right, you can actually affect the quality by planting it in the right way with the right proximity, etc. It could actually have effects on the enhance the quality in one way or the other. But again, you have to be a real bucky. I don't know how this works. Okay. Now, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseru b'divrei Torah. This is really what we were leading up to. We follow the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseru when it comes to Torah learning, the Tanya. As it says in the Braisa, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseru oimer, ein divrei Torah mekablin tuma. Divrei Torah are not susceptible to tuma. And therefore, there is no problem with a Balkari learning Torah. I'm sorry? Places, of course, right. No, he's saying as far as Tumah. Being in a bathroom is not Tumah. It's filth. There's a difference between filth and Tumah is something halachic. A person can be Tameh and perfectly clean. On the contrary, when we say that a Balkari is allowed to learn Torah, it means the state of Tumah doesn't prevent him. But, for example, he has to make sure that he cleaned off whatever semen is on his body. Right? That for sure. Cleanliness is one thing, tumah is another thing. We might call it in a misnomer kind of way, makam tumah. But a bathroom is not a makam tumah. A place with a sheretz or a place with a mace is a makam tumah. Right? So tumah, halachic tumah. I'm sorry?
What's a sheretz? Like a bug?
Not quite. Rodents and certain types of lizards. There's 8 specific species. But whatever it is, tumah means halachic tumah. Filth is a different story. And that's really the Gemara's main thrust here. Tumah is not a reason to prevent learning Torah. Filth certainly is. Now, ki asa ze'iri, when ze'iri came along, Omar, evening, he said, but lua litvilusa, he's basically just nailing in this point. They cancelled tevila. Meaning, there used to be an obligation to tovel, to immerse in the mikveh before learning Torah, that was cancelled. We're on that Chof Beis Amud Aleph, right in the middle of the wide lines. It's smack in the middle. Meaning, yeah, if one had an emission, there's no longer any need to go to the mikveh. Va'amri la, others say that what he said was, batlua lintilusa. They cancel the obligation to wash your hands. What's that talking about? Samanda Amar Batlua Litvilusa. The version that says that he said that they cancelled the immersion, Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira, means Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira, meaning there used to be an obligation to go to, for a Baal Keri to go to the mikveh before learning Torah. They cancelled that. No more such obligation. As we said, you do have to make sure you're clean, right? But you don't have to toivel in the mikveh. Manda Omar Batlua Lintilusa, in the version that says that they cancelled the obligation of washing hands, Ki hoder av chiste layita manda mahadra amaya beidan slusa. That's like we've already discussed earlier in the Mesechta. Rav Chisda would curse a person who would make a point of searching for water at the expense of the time for davening. Meaning, even though there's a chiyuv to wash your hands for davening, don't miss the zman for davening in order to find water.
Does that zman mean davening zman, or does it say that also applies to getting to a minyan on time?
Getting to a minyan on time, I don't remember now. I don't remember now the particulars. No. You can wipe your hands on something, anything that will make them clean, in order to make the tefillah of the minyan. Yeah, or a fabric or something like that. But again, lechatchila, there is an obligation to wash your hands before davening. But the point here is, don't miss the time because you don't want to daven without having washed. Okay, so what are we concluding here? Let's just bring this down. Lahalacha, and we're going to actually see more discussion on it. But what we seem to be concluding here is that yes, there used to be an obligation, there used to be an issur for a Baal Keri to engage in Torah learning. We reached a point in history where the Chachamim, Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira, and then later this was adopted by the later Amiraim, that the minig is no more. So first of all, we're just going to put this into halachic perspective. There is a lot of machloik is exactly what this means. So I'll just note, just in order to give the proper background on the subject. Rabbi Yehuda takes the most extreme approach. He says, when we say that we canceled the chiyuv, it means only for Kriyat Shema. It doesn't mean for the rest. All the rest of the Torah stays as also as ever. But that the place can reject that, basically out of hand. There's another opinion. This is the opinion that's held by a few more authorities, that it was canceled for Divrei Torah. But the chiyuv remains in effect with regard to tefillah. Is still not allowed to daven. But that opinion also is not accepted lahalacha. It's just good to know these things because we should realize that the concept still applies, as we'll see. That opinion is also not accepted lahalacha. Yet, the poskim do say that this tevila, it's not as though the whole concept disappeared. Lahalacha, the minig became that there's no chiyuv to go to the mikveh, but it does remain what they call minig chasidim anshe maisa. It's a pious custom to go to the mikveh, or we'll see soon there might be other means of purifying yourself which can be easier than going to the mikveh. We'll see. But yes, to still consider keri as having a certain tumah with regard to davening and learning, and to try to purify yourself beforehand. In fact, the place can say some very interesting things about that. When the Rambam wrote in his Sefer that Lamai said there's no chiyuv, it's interesting. It seems that in earlier times, first of all, there were a lot of areas they actually did hold the minig. For example, Rav Haigoin writes that the widespread minig is that yes, even though you don't go to the mikveh, we'll see soon, there might be a chiyuv to shower in a certain way. It's kind of a lesser way of doing it. But Rav Haigoin writes, even though we don't go to the mikveh anymore, of course a person has to shower himself. But again, the place can say that even that's not nagea, but it is important to note that in earlier times there were very many areas where they definitely did hold on to this concept to one extent or the other. And the place can say that this is in Rabbeinu Yonah cites this, that they sent a letter to the Rambam asking him how come he just writes so unequivocally that there's no chiyuv today anymore, when lamais it certainly is a chosh of a thing to do. So the Rambam writes, and this is interesting, the Rambam writes, in my Sefer, I was writing bottom line halacha, yet, and therefore I couldn't write anything else, yet, I can say about myself, I attest about myself that I have never missed this tevila. That's what the Rambam said in a personal way. I never missed this tevila. And the poskim write, for example, Rabbi Yehuda already writes, and other poskim writes, that it enhances a person's tevila. a person's davening, it enhances a person's Torah learning if he's makbid on this. Now again, as we'll see soon, of course there's a concept of going to the mikveh, but we'll see soon that it does not necessarily entail going to the mikveh. There are other ways of doing this which you might be able to do in your own shower. We'll get to it, we'll see. Well, we'll see. It gets a little bit detailed. That's the coming sugya. Whatever it is, my point is just to say that yes, the halacha l'maisa is that it's not required. Period. That's absolute. Yet, it does remain a pious practice. Unlike other things where we say, that's it, it's not the halacha. Here, the poskim do stress that it remains a pious practice, and therefore, we're going to see soon a complex discussion about other ways of doing it. The poskim do bring all that down the halacha. Even though l'maisa we paskin, none of it is required, but the poskim do bring it all down l'halacha because, yes, the meaning of, like they say, chassidim v'anshei ma'aseh, the meaning of the pious always has been to try to conform as much as possible to this concept. Now, it's important to note that it wasn't always possible. It's not always possible. For example, there were times when it was cold in the winter, it was simply not possible to do. They asked the Arizal, right? The Arizal was one of the big... he was one of the big proponents of this tevila because he very much held, especially when it comes to Kabbalah, that it's like you absolutely can't engage in Kabbalah, for example, without having done this tevila. In fact, this is something very interesting that some of the Mikubalim later, after the Arizal's time, said that a big part of the reason why Shabsai Tzvi fell was because he engaged in Kabbalah without doing this tefillah. He engaged in Kabbalah as a Baal Keri without doing this tefillah, and that was a big way led to led him to where he got to. So the Arizal was a very big proponent of this tefillah. Yet when they asked him, they said, let's say in the winter when it's not shayach, so should a person refrain from relations because he's not going to be able to daven and learn afterwards, or the davening and learning will be compromised afterwards? So the Arizal said, you certainly can't do that without your wife's permission. And even if she does give permission, it's better not to take her up. Better not to take her up. Meaning, yes, keep it in mind as a pious practice, as a beneficial practice, and it has advantages in different areas of Ruchnias. But you have to remember that at the end of the day, the halacha is that it's not required, and therefore it shouldn't end up, as we'll see soon, it shouldn't end up coming at the expense of other things. What's that? But throughout the winter months, it's not shaykh to go to the mikvah. That's how it was in earlier times. What's that? Right, that's true. That in such a situation, right, you're stuck. But the question is, what happens if a person wants to know if he should be with his wife, right? Maybe I shouldn't be with my wife because I'm not going to be able to go to the mikveh and I don't want to compromise my tefillah and learning, right? That was the question they asked the Arizal. In the winter months, I'm not going to be able to go to the mikveh. Should I not be with my wife? And his answer was, basically not. Meaning he said, you certainly can't refrain without your wife's permission. And even if she does give permission, better not to take her up. Better to continue marital relations as normal. That was what the Arizal answered to this question. What's that? That for sure. Meaning, if we for sure don't say today that a person should not learn or not daven because he hasn't been to the mikveh. We say that it's a pious practice to try to get to the mikveh before you learn or daven, but certainly not to hold back from learning or davening because you haven't been to the mikveh, as we'll see soon. Well, so Kabbalah is a different story. Kabbalah is a different story. Kabbalah that the psak in Kabbalah is that the Kabbalah should not be touched if a person is a Baal Keri and hasn't gone to the mikveh for whoever it's relevant for. Okay. Women, right? Women. Well, again, today the women, yeah, women is a different story. That's their tzidkis, and we have to envy them for their mesiras nefesh. But today, anyways, the winter is not so much the issue. What are you going to say?
Meaning what?
Right. The truth is, it's going to be even more explicit than that, as we'll see as we go through the Gemara. But you're right. And as we go through, we'll see, we'll touch a few times on the point you just raised. Okay. In fact, Reb Chaim Kanievsky brings a very interesting tradition in his Sefer. He said, authors of Sfarim, often a determining factor of whether their Sefer will be successful is whether or not they were makbid on this tevila. It's an interesting tradition that he cites. I don't know. He says often the success of a Sefer will reflect how careful the author was about this tevila. But again, all within the perspective of the halacha is not required, and therefore the tevila should not come at the expense of davening, learning, relations, etc. But it's a good thing to do if possible, and we'll see now other means of doing it.
They go to the mikvah just before Shabbos. Does that have anything to do with this?
I'm sorry?
The minhag to go to the mikvah only before Shabbos, as opposed to the rest of the week. Does that have anything to do with Balkar?
Mikvah going, the meaning of going to the mikvah before Shabbos is a different concept. It's a we'll approach it from two angles. First of all, again, in earlier times, going to the mikvah was more complicated. Or could be more complicated, maybe depending on the time of year, etc. So there were people, for example, this was very common, who were not makbid on this. They were great people, right? There were times when it was just more difficult to do, and they were not makbid on it in general. Yet, before Yom Tov, they were makbid. They wanted to make a point of going into Yom Tov pure. Or before the Yomim Neroim, right? That also, the Rishonim already say. Even if you're not makbid on this all year, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, which is a time when your tefillahs are all the more critical, go before Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. And that's why we find the whole discussion right in Halacha. Talking Halacha here, right? Not just, you know, esoteric stuff. In Halacha is a whole simanim dealing with the going to the mikvah before Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Also before the Yom Tov, since there's a concept of going into Yom Tov pure, which in earlier times was a full-fledged obligation. Person had to, you had to go to Yerushalayim, you had to bring karbanis, you had to make sure you were pure before Yom Tov. So therefore, it's a much stronger minig. We can almost call it a chiyuv to purify yourself before Yom Tov. Now there is that concept with regard to Shabbos also, but besides that, there also is a minig in and of itself to go to the mikveh before Shabbos, even if you are pure, regardless of this whole issue, which is something that you might relegate to Kabbalah, whatever it is, but it's certainly a very strong minig.
But I mean,
solid
minig. Takes care of the problem of Balkari, let's say.
Yes, takes care of it, covers the problem too. Yeah. What's that? What I would just comment on that is, right, they bring it, they spot down, I think, also from the Kedusha, Menucha Kedusha, this concept. I didn't want to cite it, but what I'll just note is that apparently the concept of Neshama Yaseira itself is a relative concept. Meaning there are different degrees of Neshama Yaseira a person might get. You see, like, for example, the Menucha Kedusha gives, he says that in order to get the Neshama Yaseira, he piles on a lot of work that you have to be busy with throughout the entire week. It's basically an intense campaign working towards that Neshama Yaseira that starts already Motzei Shabbos. Right? So I would guess that it means a certain degree of Neshama Yaseira, not the whole Neshama Yaseira altogether. But I don't know.
What does it mean, Neshama Yaseira? You got the
Neshama, it could be Yaseira. Shabbos, concept of Neshama Yaseira on Shabbos. How that works, we're not going to get into now. But we know that there's a concept of Neshama Yaseira on Shabbos, right? That's why you eat more. You have to feed, you're trying to feed double.
You explained it very well. The Neshama is very much the connection between your body and Shemayim. So the Neshama Yaseira is
an added connection, which likewise, I guess you, what you mean to say is that that certainly can be relative.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what we mean by Shabbat Sarah, that makes it.
Yeah.
A stronger connection.
Right.
People
okay.
Also,
I'm sorry?
People also deal with Zod, not just carry. I saw people out in the beginning of Ben Shemesh, they were looking around for where there was natural water flowing. Because you said that only that kind of water could cleanse someone's
self. I don't know why a person would need to do that per se. You have people's stomach makbid not to be tummy. No, but question: why would a person be desperate to be purifying himself from being a zav today?
I don't know. Who is, and
No, but what? Even if a person is a Zav, we don't need to purify ourselves today, technically. The only, again, here we're getting into esoterics. In a general way, we don't need to purify ourselves from anything other than Balkeri. Meaning, in general, we assume ourselves to be Tmei Mesim also. What are we going to do about that? You know, got a paraduma. So, again, there are, for example, the Skver Rebbe in New York, right? He's makdir on all the halachas of Tum and Tar. Right? There you're talking about something very esoteric. He doesn't want to be Tumah at all. He sits only on plastic because it's not a conveyor of Tumah. He's very, very mocked on everything. It's a very complex lifestyle.
His mother never touched him?
What's that?
His mother never touched him?
Don't know. Didn't ask. But in order to make it all work. So, again, here you're talking about esoteric levels that I can't explain. Going to mikveh for Zav would apparently be that. Could be a very, very exceptionally pious people who are holding in a higher world that are involved in that. What's that? Zav is a very specific type of substance. It's not ordinary an ordinary emission, which often is the result of a certain condition. It's not something healthy. It's not normal.
A common thing?
No, it's not a common thing. Okay. Let's move on. Atan Rabbanan. It says in the Brayis, and here we're going to start getting into the particulars of leniencies, different ways of going about it. This could be very relevant also, because you might have people who don't like the idea of going to a mikveh. You know, men's mikvehs are not as designated for the fastidious as women's mikvehs are. And people might not like the idea, so it's important to know that there are other means also of doing this if you would like to be makpid. There are ways you can do it in your shower. So let's see. That I don't know. That's based on Kabbalah. To get back to me in a few years, maybe I'll be able to answer. Tana Rabbanan. Bal Keri. I didn't say how many years. Tana Rabbanan. Bal Keri, huh?
I'll call you later tonight.
Alright. Tana Rabbanan. Valkeri, that's right. Valkeri shenasno lav tisha kab imayim tohar. A Valkeri who pours over himself 9 kav of water is tohar. 9 kav of water, if I remember correctly, is anywhere between, depending on the different shiurim, 12 to maybe, I don't remember the higher end, maybe it's 22, I'm not sure, liters, which is not all that much. The lower shear is certainly 12. The lower shear is about 12 liters.
Warm water, you mean like a shower?
What's that? Oh, so we'll get into the particulars. I'm going to double check that, what the higher end is. But depending on the sheet is, it's 12 to a higher amount. The chart downstairs, I'll have to check. Now, so this is a big leniency. 9 kav is a lot less than 40 saw. And as we'll see soon, very little is required. It doesn't have to be a kosher mikvah or anything. You take it in a pail and pour it over your head. So this is a very big leniency, right? So Nachum ish gamzu lechosha leRabbi Akiva. This was not publicized. Nachum ish gamzu whispered this to Rabbi Akiva, and he told it to him in a secret. Rabbi Akiva lach to his Talmud, Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva lachsha leBen Azai. Rabbi Akiva whispered it to his Talmud, Ben Azai, secret. Now what did Ben Azai do? Ben Azai yotza ushna leTalmidov bashuk. And Ben Azai went out and broadcasted it. He taught it publicly in the streets. Everybody should know that there's a more lenient way of doing it. Now, so let's see. So pligi batre amiroi. So this is actually machlokes amiroim as to whether that really happened or not. The Ma'arava in Eretz Yisrael. That machlokes. Rabbi Yosi bar Ovin and Rabbi Yosi bar Zvina. These two disputed this point. Chad toni shna'a. One had a version of this price that says, yes, he went out and taught it publicly. V'chantani lechasha. And the other had a version of the Braisa that said, no, Ben Azai also just taught it secretly. He didn't broadcast it. Now, so apparently there's a toss-up here. Meaning, there's reason to think that he would Davka broadcast it, and there's reason to think that he would Davka keep it a secret. What's the toss-up? Saman v'tani shna'a, the version that says that he went out and he taught it publicly, mishum bitul tayra or mishum bitul piriya v'rivya. Because it was reaching a situation where, again, person knew that he has relations with his wife, right? Now, he can't learn tayra until he goes to the mikveh. Now, what happens in an area where weren't mikvahs readily available? So a person had one of two choices. Either he doesn't have relations with his wife, or he has relations as usual and he skips learning for a couple of weeks and davening. Right? So a situation was developing where this was becoming a little too much. Yet half the town wasn't learning because they had been with their wives and they couldn't get to a mikveh. The other half of the town wasn't with their wives.
Was it for a good? Does that mean it was more... let's say the woman was already pregnant or past a certain age.
Well, that doesn't matter. A person is supposed to continue maintaining...
That's not Peruva,
it's a
different
that's Peruva is a it's a name for the concept. It's a generalization. First of all, of course, right, it's the obvious issue of Shalom Bayis, it's a very integral part of Shalom Bayis. But even besides Shalom Bayis, again, if you want to get esoteric, say that the Mikubalim say, and again, this is put down in Halacha, this is not that even when a woman is pregnant, or even when she's past the age of having children, or when a woman can't have children, nevertheless, the relations are actually creating neshamas. Don't ask me. Oh, right, similar to that concept. Don't ask me to elaborate. But there is such a concept. What's that? That's what I meant when I said, don't ask me to elaborate. I agree. I don't know. I quoted. So therefore, he felt that it was important. No, if there is a kula, it's important to know so people can utilize it. Uman detani lechasha, but the other said, no, he did keep it a secret. Why did they make a point of keeping this a secret? Because we don't want Tamid Chachamim being with the wives like chickens, meaning all the time busy with relations. See, there was a fine line to play here. Part of the purpose of this whole takana was, the truth is, to regulate relations. Relations that are done too often are not good. Relations that are done too infrequently is a crime. But too much frequency is not a good thing either. There's a difference between not a good thing and a crime. It's important to note. Right? But not a good thing. Because a person is too involved with these things. It's like any other physical pleasure that a person is overly involved with. What's that? Yeah. So it's supposed to be regulated. Person is supposed to regulate it according to his nature. That's right. Regulate it in a disciplined way, each person according to his nature and circumstances. Well, the point is regulated, disciplined, right? That was part of the point. You know that it's a process. It's not just something you do offhand, haphazardly, whatever, whenever. You know that it's a process. The next morning, there's a bureaucracy involved. You have to go to the mikveh afterwards. So, it's something that's done in a planned, disciplined way. So, therefore, they did not want to let out that there's this leniency that will make it much easier. So it was a fine line. So how do we relate to this? So again, we're still at the point in time where this was a chiyuv. So how do we relate to this? So we see, yes, there were differing approaches as to how to relate to this. Omar Abiyanai. So Abiyanai said, so if so, we see that yes, there's the initial way of doing it, a proper mikveh. And then there's this dispensation. Take a pail of water, dump it over your head. Now, Omar Abiyanai said, Shamati shemekilim bo, shamati shemachmirim bo. I heard that people have different minhagim on this. Some people are mekel, and they go with the bucket over the head approach. Other people are machmir, and they make a point of going specifically to mikveh. V'kol ha-machmir ba'al atzmoy, and whoever is machmir, ma'arichin lo yom avushnoisov. He will merit lengthy days, will merit long life. So he is encouraging and recommending being machmir and doing it the old-fashioned way in a proper mikveh. So that's one side of the coin. Then there's the other side of the coin. Omer Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says, Ma tivan shel tevlei shachin? I don't understand. Why are all these people running to the mikveh in the morning? So the Gemara says, Ma tivan? Why is he asking this question? Why are they going to the mikveh in the morning? Ha'iud Omer Balkeri Yosem B'divei Torah. He's the one who ruled very clearly that a Balkeri is not allowed to learn Torah. He doesn't hold of what we said before, that it's cancelled. He holds that the Balkeri is not allowed to learn Torah. What is he asking? Why are these people going to the mikveh? So the Gemara answers, Hachikama. What he meant was our point. Mativan ba'arboim sa'ah. Why do they have to go running to a proper mikveh with 40 sa'ah? Efsher b'tisha kabin. They can use the 9 kav, the bucket, take a bucket, right? 12 liters. That's good enough. Mativan b'tvila. Why do they have to go running to immerse themselves? Efsher b'nasina. They can just pour over their head. So that was the point. Why do they have to go to the mikveh? Why this whole big business? There's a simpler way of doing it. So we're saying that yes, there was this leniency, and there were differing approaches as to whether that is recommended straight on, right? Just do that instead, or whether no, it really is better to stick with the original mikveh method. So Amar Rabbi Chanina. So Rabbi Chanina says, Geder Godel Godruba. He says, you have to realize, before just going and dismissing the mikveh mahalach, the mikveh method, you have to realize that there's a big gain that was gained there. The Tanya, it says in the Braisa, Maisa be'echod shetova isha l'dva'avir. This is very interesting how human nature works. Sometimes a person might neglect the real mitzvah or do an avera, but what will catch him is some segula, right? Or some... So listen to this. There was a fellow who was trying to convince a woman to do an avera with him, to be mezana with him. Amrelai. So she told him, you want to be mezana? Reika. Stupid, she said. Yesh lecha aboim s'osha to tevel behem. Do you have a mikveh nearby that you'll go to afterwards? Ooh, he said, good point. Miad pirish. So he didn't do it. Hear that?
Tzaddik.
What's that? Yeah, tzaddik. So that's how human nature is. That really is how human nature is. It was, what's that?
Was she using some kind of psychology?
I don't know if she was pious or if she... I don't know exactly what the story was. What's that?
What about her?
I don't know. I don't know. Again, it's more important not to do it in the first place. Certainly the reason not to do it is not because then you'll have to go to the, I don't have a mikveh to go to afterwards. What we're saying here, that Chazal said, this is how human nature is. You tell people, ooh, you're going to have a problem afterwards with the mikveh. Oh, then I won't do it.
New York, they
What's that?
New York, they solved this problem.
I don't know what you're referring to, but this is the...
It's a known thing that a single is going to the mikveh.
Rahman al-Itslan, what can we say? Okay. So he had Pirish. So he didn't. So the truth is, the Meiri says, say to Yerushalmi, the Rishon said to Yerushalmi that this is not just a one time incident. This was something that happened. As long as this takana was in effect, it was known that When a man made a plan with, you know, when you would have a situation where a person was ready to succumb, often the deterrent would be the fact that they couldn't figure out where we'll go to the mikveh afterwards. So he's saying we should know that this takana had a chashuva effect. Okay, we're still in the middle of developing the subject. We'll stop here, but we just basically what we're seeing here is that yes, there is this leniency, and there were differing approaches as to whether this was encouraged in the first place or not. Okay.